the Redskins. Hail victory! Praise on the warpath. Fight for all we see.
Green driven back to midfield on the far side. He's got the ball up to the 45, far side 40. A seam to the 35. Waltz a man to the 30. Breaks it to the near side 25. Watch out to the 20. Near side 10. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
This is Burgundy and Gold Flashback. Now, here's Mike Richmond.
You are listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, where the tradition of a storied NFL franchise, the Washington Redskins, stays alive. I'm Mike Richmond, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. My website is redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. My guest is well known to Redskins Nation. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in Redskins history, holds team records in passing yards and completions, has been an NFL analyst for national and local media, and he's not afraid to speak his mind about the burgundy and gold. Which is why in these troubling times for the franchise, where there's a need for a lot of evaluation, he's the perfect man to have on the show. Welcome, Joe Theismann.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Yeah, great to have you on. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Before we get started on the current state of the team, and there's obviously a lot to talk about, I just want to quickly say that Joe was my most important interview for both of my books because he transcended three coaching eras, George Allen, Jack Pardee, and Joe Gibbs, of course, and such a important figure in team history and a very colorful one at that. So... to say the least.
Yeah, you're right.
So thanks again for all of that. All right, as we speak, the Redskins are now 3-7. Coming off that loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the game against the 49ers approaching on Sunday. And that was a very disappointing defeat, 23-7 to a 1-8 squad. And the season appears to be spiraling down fast. I know you have a lot to say about the game. Your initial reactions to losing to a squad like that?
You know, Mike, the thing about that game is it came after 2 weeks. And, you know, most people perceive that once you have a two-week break, you should come out refreshed and ready to go. I personally think sometimes a two-week breaks aren't necessarily good because you get into a rhythm, you get into a momentum. And certainly the Redskins had anything but what you might call a momentum against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I will say this, when you look at Tampa Bay's record, I mean, there were a couple games that they lost late in the game. I mean, it's a football team that very well could have been very easily 5-4, 4-5 going forward. And it just so happened against the Redskins that it was going to be one of those football games where, you know, the turnovers were going to make a difference and the big plays were going to make a difference. I mean, if you really break the game down, you know, Robert missed Deshaun on a couple of deep throws, and Josh managed to be able to convert some of them to Mike Evans. So when you take a look at what's accomplished, in the big play part category, you know, you see Tampa Bay with two and the Redskins with none. And, you know, the game, and that's really where the game lies, is in big plays nowadays. That's what football has become. I mean, you can run the ball and run the ball and run the ball, but you need to be able to convert big plays. And that's something they weren't able to do yesterday.
What about the fact, though, that, and I'm not saying that it was a certainty in any way that the Redskins were going to beat Tampa Bay, but what about the fact that the Redskins came out and they just looked so lifeless? You had false.
They did. They looked very flat, and it carried on through most of the game. And, you know, they finally got a spark late in the game, late in the half, when Roy Alou Jr. took the screen pass in for the touchdown. You know, and okay, we're down 13-7 at the half. The defense actually played pretty well. When you stop and think about the first two drives of the game, you had, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers score an interception, and, you know, the defense held them pretty well. So you got to feel pretty good about it going out. And then they drove the ball down the field, and the Redskin offense just was able to get out of its own way. And, it's an offense that has made mistakes at inopportune times. It's not capitalized on opportunities. Go back to the Arizona game. It's 23-20 with the ball. Go back to the Minnesota game at halftime. You're driving, you got a 10-point lead, you throw an interception. You know, different things that have stopped this football team from having a chance to be successful. And the defense, you know, even though everybody looks at their ranking when it comes to points scored, the bottom line is the offense has put the defense in some horrible situations almost every game. at least twice a game they're defending a short field. You know, you do that over nine football games, that's 18 drives. That's 20 drives that you're giving up with short fields, and people are going to score if that happens. Well, so, and then you miss a couple of field goals. So yesterday was probably the worst performance we've seen out of this football team in a long time.
Would you say that the adjectives used by Jay Gruden, he said horrific, and then Robert Griffin said travesty, you think those are accurate?
I think if you put them together, it's accurate. It was a horrific travesty is what it was.
Well, speaking
that
of...
That would be the only way to describe it.
Because it just looked like a regression. The Redskins, having beaten the Cowboys in that Monday night game, which seemed such a huge win, and then losing to the Vikings. But it seems like they took several steps back in this game.
Well, they have, and I think that, you know, one of the things you have to attribute it to is Robert Griffin III missed 6 weeks of football. And now this is his second week back. Also, you can't discount the fact that Tampa Bay Buccaneers front four is a pretty good front four. We lost Trent Williams in the game. You had Moses have to come in and play. You know, Compton has struggled at the right tackle position. That's been a sort of an eyesore most of the year. It's just struggled blocking people. Got thrown aside like a rag doll yesterday. I mean, to me, if I'm a football player and I see that, that's embarrassing. You don't want that on film. You don't want people to see you tossed around like that. You know, so this will be a big week for him because the 49ers will bring some heat. You know, Alden Smith probably going to play a little bit more football. So it's going to be a great challenge individually for him. But, you know, from a quarterback's perspective, you know, Robert is learning an offense. Unfortunately, it's in the middle of the season. The worst thing in the world could have happened to him. He got missed 6 weeks of football. There is no better lesson or way to learn than actually playing on the field. And that was something he was unable to do. Robert Griffin has played 13 quarters, Mike. Just 13 quarters of football this year.
While he's undergoing the transition to the pocket passer.
Yeah, plus he's going through a transition. Plus he's gone through some mechanical changes in the offseason by spending some time with Terry Shea and trying to work on his mechanics. So there's a lot going on for Robert. You know, but I thought last year he got away from what he wanted to do because of the injury. It made him a little more sloppy. And, you know, now he protects the ball better in the pocket, and he's got to learn to throw it away. You know, the quarterback position is one where you can help the offensive line by just getting the ball out of your hands. That way nobody criticizes them, nobody yells at them, and you can let your defense go play. Or, I mean, you wind up with first and goal on the four, and you miss a 44-yard field goal. I mean, that one sequence of plays was, I guess you could say, indicative of the way the whole entire game went.
Right, it was definitely emblematic. I want to ask you, though, before we go to break, about Griffin not being able to see the field. And even he said after the game that was a concern of his. And the coach has said it. Why is he having that problem at this point?
Because he's never been asked to do it. He hardly worked in the preseason. He only took 13 snaps in the preseason. And so he didn't really get as much work in live action. He played a game in a little bit in the regular season, didn't get a lot of action, was gone 6 weeks, didn't get a lot of action, and now it's sort of back to phase one. And it's the question is, you know, what's to be of the coaching staff to try and help him learn to be a pocket passer? That's the question that's going to be asked going forward.
Well, very good conversation we're having here, Joe. I want to continue with the talk on RG3 and other matters related to the team, but we have to go to break first. Right now, here's This Week in Redskins History.
Hey, it's Mike Richmond, the official Redskins historian and author of the Washington Redskins Football Vault and the Redskins Encyclopedia. From the pages of my books comes This Week in Redskins History. On November 23rd, 1997, Redskins quarterback Gus Frerotte did a lousy job of using his head with first place in the NFC East on the line. In an infamous image, Gus rammed his head into a padded concrete wall at the Redskins' new home, Jack Kent Cook Stadium. He was trying to celebrate after scrambling for a touchdown that gave the Skins a 7-0 lead over the Giants, but he sprained his neck and stayed in for only two more plays. Recently acquired backup Jeff Hostetler, unfamiliar with the offense, played the rest of the way, throwing three interceptions and losing a fumble in a pivotal 7-7 tie. the 8-7-1 Redskins just missed the playoffs that season. For more on Redskins history, check out my website at RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. I'm Mike Richmond for This Week in Redskins History.
Welcome back to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. I'm Redskins historian Mike Richmond, back with famed Redskins quarterback Joe Theismann, who's been a preliminary nominee for the Hall of Fame. Joe, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Regarding, though, Griffin in the pocket, we're talking about him not seeing the field and so forth, but he's just missing so many open receivers. To just go back to what you had been saying previously, that it's just he hasn't had enough time.
Well, I think Mike, it's obviously a combination of things. I mean, having Deshaun open like he did in the game and not capitalizing on him, you know, makes it tough. I mean, like I said, this is a game of big plays, and when you have them available to you, don't convert. It's deflating to everybody. It's deflating to the offense and to the defense. And you know, you reach a point as a play caller, as Jay Gruden does, is, you know, what can I call? I can only call routes to get people open. You know, we need to execute them. And one of the things that was discouraging yesterday was I felt when Robert came out of Baylor a couple years ago that one of the things he did exceptionally well was throw the ball deep and accurately. And that didn't happen yesterday. So, you know, he's going through a growing process. Unfortunately, it's a growing process that's taking place during the regular season and not in preseason or not in training camp. And, you know, like I said, it's just going to be a question of how well he plays, what he's going to be able to do going forward, and what the coach decides, you know, depending upon how the team's playing.
This is the big mystery to me, and I know a lot of fans and followers of the team and so forth. How could a quarterback be so spectacular in his rookie season and then have such a major drop-off in his third year in the league? I know that he's had the knee injuries. I know that there's this transition to being more of a pocket passer, but why has there been sort of that regression with Robert Griffin III?
Well, I think there are a couple reasons that I look at. Number one, you can't disregard the fact that he has been hurt. In his rookie season, he rushed for 944 yards. You don't want him to run for that many yards. I mean, you look at, you know, Russell Wilson is probably the one that's running around more. Colin Kaepernick, not running near as much as he did before. The successful quarterbacks in this league are drop-back quarterbacks. Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, even Aaron Rodgers, who's extremely athletic and could probably match any one of these guys running the football, doesn't, because he realizes that's where the success is going to be, is in the pocket, something that Robert has to transition into. I think Robert is learning how to be a athlete that was so used to relying on his athletic skills to escape trouble that now he has to rely on something else. He has to rely on a decision process. And so as far as that decision process goes, it's not as easy to transition into as one might think. It takes time.
Do you see a strained relationship between Jay Gruden and RG3 in terms of basically not being on the same page? And I also want to go back to the 1981 season and your situation with Joe Gibbs, the 0-5 start, and you two obviously weren't on the same page, and I know you went to his house to smooth things over, and the rest is history. Do you see something similar between these two? Because Jay Gruden has been very critical of RG3 and his mechanics and not being able to see the field, and also calling out teammates. I mean, the coaches said things to that extent. So do you think the two are not seeing eye to eye?
No, I don't think that's the case at all. I think that what you get in this situation is, you know, basically Jay's press conference has basically said, hey, look, you know, when you look at the press conference on Monday, I think he made it very, very clear that, you know, he's the coach and Robert's the quarterback. I don't perceive any issue or problem going forward. I think what Robert was trying to say was he was trying to take responsibility, didn't quite present it the way I think Jay wanted to hear it presented, or even the way he maybe wanted it to come out. But as it turned out, I think the air has been cleared. There is no question who the coach is. There's no question who the quarterback is. And he has one job and one job only to focus on, and that's playing quarterback. And so I don't perceive a problem at all.
Do you stand by your preseason comments in terms of when you spoke about Kirk Cousins and his ability to be the starting quarterback, saying that if there was a quarterback competition, it would not even be one, that Cousins would be the man. Do you think he should be playing instead of RG3 at this point?
As far as who's playing now at this point, that's totally entirely up to the coach. I mean, Colt McCoy played very well in relief of Kirk Cousins. But you go back to that. You go back to the comment that I made with regards to the preseason. Is, you know, Kirk played very well and is much more comfortable in a dropback scenario than Robert is. And like I said, Robert's in a learning process. Kurt's much further ahead in it, as is Colt.
And one final question, I just wanted to get your thoughts about Jay Gruden himself, being a first year coach. You were in an identical situation in 1981 with Joe Gibbs being in his first season. So if you could just give me your thoughts on him and maybe some comparisons to Gibbs.
You know, it's interesting you ask, because no one's ever asked this, but I think Jay is similar to Joe in so much they're terrific play callers. They do a terrific job adjusting at halftime. You know, Joe could call to get people open. It was my job to get them the football. Jay can call things to get people open. It's Robert's job to get them the football. I had John Riggins. He has Alfred Morris. I had a great offensive line, and this is something that the Redskins continue to try and put together as an offensive line, and they struggle with it. The wide receiving core. I had two little guys, and Alvin and Virgil were fabulous, and Charlie and Art. I mean, you look at this receiving core, it's as good as there is in the league. Just got to figure out ways to get them the football. We've got a deep threat. We've got medium threats. We've got balls to be able to convert third downs. I like the way Jay calls a game. And I think, you know, this particular game, after this game, the press conference, and what goes forward in this week basically says, hey, look, I'm in charge. I'm the coach of this football team. And I think everybody's going to take note that that's what he is. Mm-hmm. He's not happy with what's going on. And Joe is the similar way. They're not ranters and ravers and, you know, you're not going to hear like from Jim Mora, playoffs, oh my gosh, or some of the other comments that we've seen some of the other coaches.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, I want to say this has been a lot of fun, and really appreciate you coming on the show. And I hope we cross paths in the future at maybe Redskins alumni events or at FedEx. And so thanks again.
Thanks, Mike. Good catching up with you.
Great. And many thanks to my audience for listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. And thanks to my producer, Mike Engel, for his work running the board. I'm Mike Richman. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. For now, hail to the Redskins.